Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, November 13th, 2021. Section A. Reporter Telegram finds a new home in the Apex building by Stuart Doreen. The Reporter Telegram is ready to announce its next home. We have moved to the Apex building inside the Claydesta area, northwest of the intersection of Wadley Avenue and Big Spring. The new offices will be open to the public on November 22nd. The previous Reporter Telegram offices were located downtown at 201 East Illinois. That building was purchased by the nonprofit Thriving United. Here's the information about our new home. Address, 15 Smith Road, Suite 1004, Midland 79705. Phone number 432-682-5311. Customer hours 10 a.m. to noon and 2 to 4 Monday through Friday. The doors will remain locked at all times. Please ring the doorbell for assistance. What is the process for those who want to pay their bills in person? Customers may drop their payment off in our drop box in the northwest corner of our new location at Smith Road. What if a person wants to subscribe or has a question about a subscription? Please call 432-688-2700. Does the process change if a person has not received the paper? No. Please call 432-688-2700. What if a person needs to talk to someone in the advertising, accounting, or editorial departments? Accounting, please contact Senior Group Accounting Manager Sherry Reiserts at 432-687-8873. Advertising, please contact Advertising Director Chad Anderson at 432-687-8813. Editorial, please contact Editor Stuart Doreen at 432-352-0605 to schedule an appointment. For other questions, please contact General Manager Robert Granfeld at 432-687-8808. General Manager Granfeld has more info on the Reporter Telegram's move. Is the Reporter Telegram still officing out of Midland? Yes, the Midland Reporter Telegram has moved to our new offices at 15 Smith Road, Midland, Texas, 79705. Why did the Reporter Telegram move from 201 East Illinois? The building on East Illinois needed updating and repairs, and the decision was made to find a new space that fits our business needs better. What are some of the advantages of the new location? Our new location is closer to both our subscribers and advertisers, with convenient parking, a drop box, and overall easier access to our office. Is there anything a person needs to know when coming to the new location? There is a doorbell, and the door will remain locked at all times. We ask that unvaccinated visitors wear a mask when entering our office. Old MRT Building to become Recovery Center by Caitlin Randall. The downtown Reporter Telegram building has been sold to Midland nonprofit Thriving United, which plans to turn the space into a community center for addiction recovery, featuring meeting and meditation rooms, a computer lab, dog park, and rooftop garden. With new floor plans drawn up and the walls gutted, only the front facade of the 60-year-old building is expected to stay the same, according to Pat Brown, president of Thriving United. He said the community center will be open to the public in summer of 2022. Thriving United became a 501c3 certified in March 2020, at the same time they began renting their current space across from the Midland County Courthouse. Brown said the organization went from having 2 employees to 23 and from seeing 40 people to about 150. It's a beautiful thing that's starting to develop in this city. There's a whole new recovery movement going on. The first floor of the community center will include multiple meeting rooms, a meditation room, recovery cafe, computer lab, and kids station. On the second floor, there will be a recording studio, paint and craft studio, gallery rooms, a rooftop terrace for events, and a rooftop garden. Brown said the nonprofit takes various approaches to addressing substance abuse, including counseling, peer mentoring, assisting with finding housing and jobs, and creating a community. It's a multifaceted disorder, Brown said. It has a physical component, it has an emotional component, and a mental component, and a spiritual component. We try to address this all on four levels. In addition to using the current building at 201 Illinois, Thriving United will construct a separate building on the lot to be used for larger meetings. This building will also have a wellness center with gym equipment, a porch area, and an outdoor dog park. Some components of the building's original function as home to a small-town newspaper will remain. One section of the first floor will be converted into a Reporter-Telegram museum, and the printing presses will stay on site. I used to throw papers for MRT back when I was a kid. My brother had a route, and I helped him out, Brown said. And as a kid, we used to come on field trips to see the printing press. It broke my heart to think something may happen to the printing press, so we're going to preserve that and ideally someday even print a newsletter with it. Brown said he became passionate about helping people with recovery after suffering from addiction himself. He said Thriving United serves to fill in the gaps left in the recovery process after people leave treatment centers, which usually only allow patients to stay for a 30-day detox. Statistics show that the ones who make it have a lot of support, said co-founder Jennifer Bolin. For ones that don't have any family support, this is where they gain their support. That's where we fill in the gaps, because those people are the ones who fall through the cracks. They're so used to survival, and we teach them how to live. About 10 miles from the site of the future community center, Thriving United is constructing the Angel Haven Village, which will also open next summer. Brown said the neighborhood off Elkins Road will include about 60 to 70 homes for single moms, dad, families, and single people who are in recovery and in need of housing. The village will have a pool, volleyball courts, places for gathering, and a respite house for those in need of emergency care. For more information or to donate, visit thrivingunited.org. Meet the Papers, Publishers, and GMs. Robert Granfeldt is the current general manager of the Reporter-Telegram. He started with the Hearst West, Texas newspaper group in June 2020, overseeing the Midland Reporter-Telegram, the Plainview Herald, the Canyon News, and the Muleshoe Journal. Granfeldt is the eighth publisher general manager since Hearst's acquisition of the Reporter-Telegram in 1979. Previous publishers were William C. Bill Thomas, George Irish, Charles Spence, Dave Waddell, Michael Distelhorst, Jeff Shabram, and David Robbins. Other publishers, going back to the 1929 merger of the papers, has become the Reporter-Telegram, include T. Paul Barron, the Allison family, specifically James Allison and James N. Allison Jr., assumed the lead role of Midland's newspapers. Council to decide on Nueva Vista land by Stuart Doreen. There's a chance that the development issues with land where the Nueva Vista golf course resides end next week. The Midland City Council will decide on requests related to zoning and a site plan having to do with the housing development in Northwest Midland. The Midland Odessa Golf Corporation wants change zoning from AE, Agricultural Estate, to PD, Planned Development District for Housing Development and Shopping Center. It also wants the council to approve the preliminary plat. The city's Planning and Zoning Commission passed both items during a meeting in October. Tuesday's meeting will be the next chance for the developer and those residing in developments adjacent to the golf course, specifically Grasslands Estates, to make their respective voices heard. The Grassland contingent has led the effort to keep the golf course and stop a development they believe will be too dense and will hurt the valuations of their property. Grasslands residents have objected to not having seen a drainage study and to the traffic and congestion they believe will happen with a 600-plus home community. A site plan provided by the city shows 55 zero-lot line garden homes, 180 townhomes, 134 single-family homes, three single-family homes, 147 single-family of two homes, and 110 single-family of one home. That is 626 homes on around 100 acres. The site plan also shows an amenity center and 76 acres of green space, typically in areas on the outside of the development, to provide a buffer between it and the neighboring developments like Grasslands and Grasslands West. In July, the council approved the voluntary annexation of land that includes the Nueva Vista Golf Course. It also approved a zone change. At the time, there were council members who said they wanted to see problems with drainage and traffic solved. Mayor Patrick Payton at the time told those in council chambers, "There's nothing that's been concluded. We'll see what the developer brings, and the council will still have to deal with these issues as we move forward. What's going to be there and what might not be there." This week, some council members didn't sound like they have been convinced. District 4 Representative Lori Blong told the Reporter Telegram that she will be unable to support the items related to the development with the information she possesses. District 3 Councilman Jack Ladd said he was a no on the site plan. At-large Councilman Spencer Rodnett said he was planning to vote against the project density, specifically the SF3 townhomes and garden homes, was an issue for him. Michael Trost didn't return an email from the Reporter Telegram, but he voted against requests for annexation and zoning in July and is expected to follow suit. When asked about where he stands, Payton wrote, "My position will be clear Tuesday," a position he said has been consistent with his comments throughout the Nueva Vista discussions. Still, developers will have their opportunity to make their case and convince the council that this development makes sense for Midland. One issue that Blong did not bring up this week is that an approval of the proposed changes would mean that the existing Nueva Vista golf course would have to cease to operate as a golf course. The current zoning of Nueva Vista is AE, which is the appropriate zoning for a golf course in our city ordinance. If we approve a zone change to the proposed PD, a golf course will no longer be acceptable usage of the land. I do believe it is the prerogative of the property owner to seek a zoning change and thus change the allowable usage of his property. So this concern alone does not impel me to vote against the proposal. I just hope the owner considers the full implication of his request. Area's inclusion into I-14, now law, by Mellon McEwen. 5 years of work to have the western leg of Interstate 14 include Midland and Odessa and San Angelo have come to fruition. Earlier this year, the Senate approved an amendment offered by Senator Ted Cruz and Ralph Warnock to designate the western leg of I-14 to include the three Texas towns, while also extending the eastern segment across Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. Earlier this month, the House of Representatives passed that same measure, and it was signed into law earlier this week. The designation of Interstate 14 through Midland-Odessa brings with it enhanced connectivity for commerce and national security, and the Midland Development Corp extends thanks to MOTRAN and congressional and local leaders whose tireless work and advocacy brought this opportunity to fruition, Senator Harris said. Whether it is the energy or agriculture sector, I-14 connects the economies and markets that are actually conducting commerce today, according to MOTRAN. The improved access to Gulf Coast ports, as well as the East Coast, and ability to transport natural gas to European markets is great for the energy industry in the Permian Basin, but it's also great for giving the Permian Basin additional ports to access for consumer goods and different options outside of Long Beach, California. The original designation was along USI-90 from US 190 from Brady to I-10, while the newly designated route through San Angelo, Midland, and Odessa makes a lot more sense when looking at population, traffic levels, and freight loads for designation to interstate standards, and was ultimately less expensive to convert the original designation, new western leg to Midland-Odessa, and a subsequent inclusion of an ancillary segment of US 385 creates a sort of Permian Basin loop. While we are not advocating for all these routes to be interstates, we do believe the ultimate upgrade of these roads will help provide transportation resiliency and redundancy in the Permian Basin, said James Beauchamp in announcing the I-14 designation had become law. Creation of this loop around the central Permian Basin will help create an overall solution as opposed to just individual road improvements. That loop and its contents represent 44% of Texas energy production. The Midland Basin alone represents 20% of U.S. crude production. This type of Permian Basin loop just makes sense. When you factor in some of the other area improvements like State Highway 18, 302, and US 285 in the Delaware Basin and their connections back to this Permian Basin loop, we think the future looks bright as far as time and cost savings for industry and safety for our driving public. Midland gas price closing in on state average, by Stuart Doreen. The average gas price in Midland is within 7 cents of the state average. It's the closest spread in recent memory, as the price in Midland dropped more than many of the larger metropolitan areas of the state. AAA Texas reported an average of 314 in Midland, which was 3 cents lower than last week. That's the fourth highest average in the state, behind 328 average in El Paso. The state average was 307, which was the same as last week. AAA Texas reported that drivers in Texas are paying the third lowest gas price average in the country. Gas price averages will remain above $3 a gallon unless the price of crude oil, which makes up approximately 50 to 60% of the cost of retail fuel, comes down. The latest decision by OPEC and its oil-producing allies to maintain their planned gradual increase in output will not help to lessen the global supply constraints or lower prices of retail fuel in the U.S. Some of the largest week-over-week drops in Texas happened across the region, including 8 cents in El Paso, 4 in San Angelo, and 3 cents in Midland, Odessa, and Abilene. The average in Midland is up $1.14 compared to the same time in 2020. The average year-over-year price in Texas is up $1.27. City sales tax numbers are recovering from pandemic, by Stuart Doreen. The city of Midland reported the best monthly sales tax report percentage-wise since the start of the economic downturn. The city showed that $4.625 million in sales tax was collected in November. That was 17.6% higher than November 2020. That percentage was also higher than September, when a 17.3% increase was reported. City of Midland records show that November 2021's total collection was lower than the same months in 2018 and 19, but higher than the other Novembers going back to at least 2012. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection. That is, November's collection is based on September's sales. New area business puts up signage in preparing to open, by J.C. Lewis. Signage for a new business went up at the Imperial Shopping Center. Code Ninjas, the world's largest and fastest growing kids coding franchise, will soon have a Midland location. The educational program uses popular video games such as Minecraft and Roblox to teach kids how to code, build video games, and have fun. Participants develop problem solving, critical thinking, and STEM skills in a fun, safe, and inspiring environment. Code Ninjas is for children ages 5 to 14 and will be located at 3211 West Wadley, Suite 13, behind Murray's Deli. Registration for early access families opens in the next few weeks in time to be purchased for Christmas presents. The first 50 kids to join the Code Ninjas family will receive a voucher for a complimentary Minecraft or Roblox summer camp at Code Ninjas. Follow Code Ninjas Midland, CNM, on Facebook to stay up to date on CNM and its progress. Interested families may also visit codeninjas.com/text.midland to learn more about Code Ninjas. Texoga President. Rise in activity means more jobs, by Mel McEwen. U.S. oil and gas operators continue to slowly but steadily put drilling rigs back to work. Oilfield services company Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus Friday said the U.S. rig count rose by 6, the third consecutive weekly increase, to 556, 244 more than the reported amount last November. There were 454 rigs seeking crude, up 4, and 218 more than the 236 drilling for oil last year. There were 102 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 2, and 29 more than the 73 seeking gas a year ago. The Permian Basin inched up one rig to 272 and continues to hold almost half the nation's drilling rigs. Todd Staples noted that the rig count is the highest it's been since April of 2020. Increased rigs mean increased jobs for Texans. Josh Adler, chief executive officer of Source Energy, said everyone is saying the same thing. The public companies are practicing capital discipline, but the private companies, private equity-backed companies, are grabbing market share. If the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries suddenly cut loose, this could all go down very fast. Everyone is cautious. He called it insane that President Biden is begging OPEC to pump more oil to cut gasoline prices, which would lead to more gasoline consumption, while making it tougher for American companies to do the same. Moving the same amount of oil consumption to overseas producers does nothing to reduce greenhouse gases. The same amount of oil gets burned globally for the same amount of climate impact. Plus, he added, shipping the oil further distances in huge diesel tankers and shifting production to countries with less stringent environmental regulations, with more methane leakage and more flaring, just sends American consumer dollars out of America instead of supporting American companies, capital, and workers, result in a net increase of greenhouse gases and environmental damage. Anxiety over federal action cools prices. Uncertainty over whether or not the Biden administration will take action to help tame energy prices helped lower crude prices, which Bloomberg reported have recorded their longest stretch of weekly losses since March. WTI rose 3 of 5 trading days, including a $2.22 spike above $84 a barrel on Tuesday. Natural gas prices suffered a down week following 4 of 5 days, ending up below the $5 level. The Energy Information Administration forecast volatile natural gas prices this winter in its November short-term energy outlook. The agency attributes this outlook to uncertainty about weather. The extreme cold experienced in February led to lower-than-average natural gas storage levels through the summer, raising concerns about winter weather that are contributing to price volatility as another winter approaches. In its outlook, the agency estimates gas storage levels had built within 3% of the previous five-year average at the end of October. Mild weather has limited natural gas consumption and helped bring our storage levels closer to average in recent weeks, but cold winter weather could continue to put upward pressure on prices. Winter temperatures will be the key driver of natural gas demand, inventories, and ultimately prices. According to Bloomberg, oil prices recouped some losses Friday after Press Secretary Jen Psaki refused to say whether President Biden plans to release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Todd Staples told the Reporter-Telegram, as demand for indispensable oil and natural gas continues to grow, producers are increasing production accordingly. We must not forfeit energy freedom for energy dependence. Misguided policies that encourage foreign energy instead of encouraging American pipeline projects, domestic production, and trade opportunities hurt not just industry, but communities across the state and nation. All Americans need to encourage elected officials to support affordable, reliable energy available here at home. There may be relief for consumers ahead. In its November outlook, the EIA noted that since the third quarter of 2020, global demand for crude oil and petroleum products has increased faster than production, which has led to inventory draws and increasing crude oil prices. The EIA is forecasting that global liquid fuels inventories will begin building in 2022. Driven by rising production from OPEC Plus and the United States, which will contribute to falling crude oil prices. Its forecast has crude prices beginning to decline this month and continue to decline through next year. The EIA expectation is West WTI will fall from an average of $76 a barrel this coming January to $62 a barrel by next December. Prices will face downward pressure as global inventories begin building next year, led by rising production from U.S. and OPEC and allied nations, combined with slowing growth in global oil demand. Even when I leave the house, I'll be going home. A commentary by Stuart Doreen, editor. I don't want to go back into the office. Not exactly employee of the month stuff, but it's just the reality of a professional life impacted by the COVID pandemic. I wrote a while back that my happy place is at my desk at home with my old dog snoring away on his bed. It's still true. The interesting thing is, I was the one fighting the move to remote work. I didn't like it one bit. Around 19 months later, I will be the one kicking and screaming the most to go back in. Yes, my company has provided us a new home, and yes, it is nice. But I have enjoyed the convenience of sleeping 5 feet away from my work desk, not wearing work clothes, of being there when my daughters return home from school, of going to the pantry for lunch and other times, and of having CNBC on in the background, so I always know the price of West Texas Intermediate crude. That's a lot of change. A lot can change in 19 months since leaving the old Reporter-Telegram building on Illinois. We sold it to a man named Pat Brown. He runs the nonprofit Thriving United, which helps people fight substance abuse. My expectation is that the building is in good hands. I hope all Midlanders give a look at Mr. Brown's organization and consider supporting its mission. It's a most worthy endeavor. I will also return to work without my sidekick of nearly a decade. You know about that, but yes, she is still retired. Bad for me, but good for her. Other changes in Midland since March 20th include the price of oil fell in the spring of 2020 and reached higher than $84 earlier this week. A tale of two eras there. Pioneer Natural Resources and Diamondback are bigger, and downtown Midland's dominant player started the pandemic as Concho, but ended flying the flag of ConocoPhillips. There's a new MISD superintendent and permanent Midland city manager, a new congressman, and we know that we are guaranteed a new state senator and two new council members. We had Chinese protesters in Midland and Midland protesters in Washington. Midlanders saw one tax addition pass for the hospital district in July 2020, and one fail miserably, the county assistance district, last week. And the unemployment rate in Midland, which was 3.4% when the pandemic began, rose quickly to 12.4% and has dropped to 4.9% as reported in October. As far as COVID goes, there have been nearly 26,000 cases inside Midland County, according to the Department of State Health Services, and more than 372 deaths. That is a sobering statistic. I'm sure Monday there will be a realization that life is again changing. Maybe it will be when I put on the editor's uniform, slacks, and a button-down. It will probably hit me when I drive to a parking space that is as unfamiliar as Legacy was to Rebel fans prior to the pandemic. Will the vehicle want to steer itself downtown, past the police department, and across from First Methodist Church Midland? Will it be different not walking to Midland City Council meetings for the first time in 20 years? I expect the answer to both is yes. Will there be a benefit to the new routine? Absolutely. Many of them. One benefit is this. The Reporter-Telegram offices need to be open. We are the number one source of Midland news. That isn't a dispute, but there are some who used the sale of our previous home and then the pandemic to tell a story that the Reporter-Telegram was no longer based in Midland. That has been and remains categorically false. On November 22nd, our new offices opened to the public. Give me a call and I'll give you the nickel tour. I might not have my snoring buddy at my side in my happiest of places, but I will be home just like I have been every workday since January 9th, 1995. Donald Richard Chambers, 87, died peacefully on November 9th. He requested to be cremated. A memorial celebration will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 16th at the First Christian Church. All are welcome to attend. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Juanita Gonzalez Avena passed away on November 9th. Visitation will be at 4 o'clock p.m. on November 15th at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Tuesday the 16th at 11 at Jesus Name UPC in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Linda Carol Keeler Porter passed away on November 11th. A memorial service will be held on Sunday, November 14th, 2 p.m. at the branch at MPW. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Morris Ray Hastings of Stanton passed away on November 4th. A celebration of life will begin at 11 a.m. on November 15th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Memorials may be directed to the MD Anderson Cancer Center or Renew Life Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Vance Hollis Percy of Midland passed away on November 6th. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 13th at St. Anne's Church in Midland. Funeral directions are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Cynthia Schrenkle of Midland passed away November 11th. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 18th at First Baptist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Wayne Phillips of Midland passed away October 20th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, November 17th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Gardens.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, November 13th. ECISD to open wellness clinic by Ruth Campbell. After years of off-and-on discussion, plans to open an Ector County ISD wellness clinic in January 2022 are moving forward. The clinic comes along with a switch from Blue Cross Blue Shield to Aetna. This time around, Dr. Murray is on our medical plan committee. He was ready to move forward in that commitment, and so with his help on our medical plan committee, we were able to come into an agreement and vote upon this clinic. So that's how it became not just a goal, but now we're moving forward with that, Director of Benefits and Risk Management, Yolanda Gordon said. The district's insurance plan is self-funded. Our goal is to allow this clinic to become a comprehensive primary care wellness center. What we mean by that is that we'll allow the staff and their families to participate before their medical condition becomes an actual medical condition. We're trying to cover preventive medical conditions. There are some things we won't be able to do, such as long-term or terminal-type medical conditions, which we hope are rare, but they do occur, Gordon said. The clinic will be able to help with blood pressure, diabetes, and preventable diseases. Mental health services also will be available as they currently are. Gordon said they hope they can use the wellness clinic to reduce inpatient stays at the hospital and costs. She added that it could also help reduce outpatient and prescription costs. We're also seeing it as a type of recruitment tool because we know that medical cost is one of the main reasons teachers are willing to relocate from different areas, Gordon said. We have some teachers that come to us from our past. We have teachers that come to us from the Lubbock area, surrounding areas, even as far as South Texas, and the first question they ask us is, what about your medical plan? They go into specifics of the self-funded plan. We provide a competitive package. When I started with the district, we did not have co-pays, so they basically had to meet their deductible or pay that reduced cost that insurance allows. But they still had a high expense, so the one thing that we did utilize my first year here was adding that co-pay, which has been a big plus. You go see a doctor. If you're a participant in your Option 1 plan, you pay $50 to see a doctor. And if you're a participant about 3 or Option 3 HSA, health savings account, you have to meet your deductible first, Gordon said. Younger employees say they don't have to see a doctor as often, so they take the lower cost plan and pay $60 a month instead of the $125 they normally pay, Gordon said. She and her team, which includes Maria Melendez and risk manager Estella Behiel, are doing outreach to other district departments to encourage them to participate in the plans. Gordon said they hope to bring on a coordinator soon. Our custodial, our food service, departments that haven't taken an interest in our medical plan, we're outreaching, sending notifications in Spanish and English, working with their department heads to promote wellness. We understand that teachers are hard to come by, but so is food service, so is custodial, so is transportation. So we're outreaching to our entire district and trying to keep us as healthy as possible, Gordon said. Asked if she had any idea why custodians and food service employees, for example, don't sign up for the plan, she said cost is a factor. If we can encourage them to make that investment and then be able to utilize our clinic and not have to pay anything out of pocket, that would be a big step for them. It's just encouraging them to understand that they can be really proactive in taking care of themselves physically and emotionally. We're hoping that by providing that information, we can encourage them to do it. We have visited with those particular departments on a one-on-one basis because I, too, wanted to see why they had such a low participation. Some of them say that they're covered by their spouses, and some of them really don't like to address the question at all. But what I was promoting to them was, then at least let me give you information that might encourage you to see things differently. We hope that they're healthy and that they don't have a problem down the line medically. But if they do, here's what's available to you. This year, of course, we're going from Blue Cross Blue Shield to Aetna. We've had Zoom meetings to promote medical plan changes and information. We are sending out correspondence via email. We are allowing departments to invite us to go in and speak to the departments about the changes and why we're incorporating these particular changes. And it's all for the financial well-being of our health plan, being self-funded and to promote wellness. If there's some way we could have cost reduction on administration fees, which are usually what cost the plan so much, then that's what we want to do, Gordon said. Aetna owns CVS Pharmacy, and they have health hubs that can be used, which Gordon said is another benefit of the medical plan. The clinic location has not yet been determined, but it will be staffed with a doctor, a nurse practitioner, and 4 medical assistants. It will be open for 40 hours per week, Gordon said. The hours have not yet been set, but there may be some days where it will be open later. Her goal is to have reviews on a quarterly basis to make sure they are open during hours that make sense for employees. All services provided will be at no cost to employees on the health plan. That means the visits, the labs, and shots. We have a teacher who has some athletes that need physicals. They can get them there as well at no cost, which right now, usually they had to pay $25 in their schools to get that done. But this would cover those costs. We will have a mental health counselor. We're making sure that that person is going to be available Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week, she said. She noted that it's hard for a teacher to schedule an appointment now. Right now, as it stands, if you need to see a doctor, you pretty much have to wait a week to 2 weeks, if not longer. So our goal is to kind of defeat that right off the bat with this clinic. When we did visit with the medical plan committee, they were really interested in that as well, she added. The district's medical plan runs from January 1st through December 31st. Currently, option one is $125 for an employee only. It goes up if you add a child, several children, or a family unit. They also have the option of covering an employee and spouse. Option three is a lower premium but a much higher deductible. We started open enrollment on November the 1st, and we've started really strong, Gordon said. On-site enrollers have been sent to Permian and Odessa high schools. We received some very positive feedback from both campuses, and we send reminders to the principals, and we send notifications to them on a regular basis, she said. She added that she sends updates to them on participation and options they have for the rest of the open enrollment period. Because we are going from November the 1st to December the 3rd, and on December the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, we have what we call makeup days. So they'll be here in our administration building, not just for the administration staff, but for anybody in the district that did not have the opportunity to meet with one, Gordon said. They will also be available if someone signs up for something and has second thoughts. Any selections or elections do not go into effect until January 1st, 2022, she said. Jesus House to Have Old-Fashioned Christmas Fare by Michael Bauer. The Jesus House Women and Children's Center will be looking to get everyone in the holiday spirit with its old-fashioned Christmas fare. The event, which is being held for the first time and will benefit the Jesus House Women and Children's Center, is scheduled 6 to 9:30 p.m. Friday at Mid-Cities Church in Midland. The fair will offer a look back in time to an old-fashioned Christmas with food, candy, and a lighted hayride through the neighborhood's Christmas lights and living nativity scene. The old-fashioned Christmas celebration is really about getting back to the old-school style of celebrating Christmas with the trees, with families, with friends, and some good music and fellowship. Board member at Jesus House Women and Children's Center, Dustin Fawcett, said. Fawcett said that guests will be able to enjoy music and artists will be coming to play later in the evening. The special guest music artist will be Matt New, a Midland-based singer-songwriter who was on season 17 of NBC's show, The Voice. We are excited, Fawcett said, of having New perform. He's local, born and raised. The community stood behind him when he was on The Voice, so having a big name like him is great. Our organization has been in contact with him for a long time, and he's wanted to help and participate. We know it'll bring some folks in who probably wouldn't have been thinking of coming. He's a good Christian man, and we're excited to have him. Since New's appearance on The Voice, he has been working on his debut EP, in Atlanta, Georgia, and Nashville, Tennessee, where he plans to release that project next spring. We are thrilled to have him, director of the Jesus House Women and Children's Center, Shirley Almanza said. Matt has left the area and lives in Atlanta and Nashville to pursue his singing-songwriting career. We're very privileged and thrilled to have him come and perform for us. In addition, the fair will also invite the community members to participate in creating their own custom tree, and there will be a tree decorating competition. Fawcett says the Jesus House Women and Children's Center is reaching out to youth groups and churches and anyone else that wants to participate. "We want to have the whole community engaged and have the Christmas spirit," Fawcett said. "We feel like we need something positive in the community, and this is an attempt for that. We're also raising money for a tremendously good cause. These people that we're helping, they've fallen on tough times, and the Christmas spirit is about lifting up the least among us. That's what we're trying to do." A silent auction will also be going on, and people can purchase their pre-decorated Christmas tree as well. With this being the inaugural event, Fawcett says the Jesus House Women and Children's Center is hoping for a decent turnout. The Jesus House Women and Children's Center has been open for about a year now, so this is really to help us continue to get our feet underway and service as many women and children as we can and give them the good resources that we can to help them be successful. The center opened earlier this year in February. Of course, this is a Christian organization, so we really believe in the Christian message of helping those who are oftentimes less fortunate, Fawcett said. That's the whole mission of Jesus House Women and Children's Center, and the reason behind this is that it's a unique organization. We wanted to put on a unique event that children of all ages will enjoy. There's no set goal of how much they hope to raise from the fair. Anything is positive, Fawcett said. We're not having to spend a huge amount of resources. Mid-Cities Church has been very gracious. Matt New has been very gracious with his time and talents. Everyone that is participating is donating a lot of their time and talents and treasure towards this. Anything and everything is welcomed, and we're excited for it. Over this past year, the Jesus House Women and Children's Center has had a few fundraisers rescheduled due to different reasons, from the pandemic to the weather. "The whole nation and world has been hurting," Fawcett said. "Our first fundraiser was back last February, which was difficult to put on. We had a comedian whose flight was canceled due to the freeze from the winter storm around Valentine's Day. This whole event, we had the freeze and we had COVID, so really this is our second go-around to raise some money for a good cause. We're excited to see people and to have fellowship. It's very exciting to tell people in person about the good that this organization is bringing. This event was also supposed to take place last year, but couldn't due to social distancing guidelines. We are so excited to be able to do this," Almanza said. "We had this planned for last year, but COVID got in the way. We had to respect the social distancing laws. We're really excited to go through with it this year. It's going to be so much fun." If you go, old-fashioned Christmas fair, 6 to 9:30 p.m. Friday, Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Highway 191, tickets $10. Police identify two killed in shooting. OPD offers few details on Thursday deaths. Odessa Police Department officials offered little information Friday on the shooting deaths of two people on Thursday night and would not say if they are seeking a suspect. The only information released was the names of the two people who died from gunshot injuries on Thursday evening. Phone calls to the OPD public relations manager were not answered, but a text asking if there was a threat to anyone following the shooting was answered with the press release, "With all the new info we're releasing is out." The pair was identified as 28-year-old Heather Leanne Hernandez Rodriguez and 21-year-old Aidan Barrientos Barrera Jr., a news release stated. The next of kin has been notified. The shootings happened Thursday night as OPD officers responded to the 900 block of West 40th Street following multiple 911 calls. A neighbor in the area on Friday afternoon said they heard three shots fired from what sounded like a high-caliber pistol. The neighbor said about 5 minutes after the gunshots, the police showed up. Officers reportedly found two people dead from gunshot injuries. Both bodies have been sent for an autopsy. The investigation is ongoing. At this time, OPD detectives, crime scene unit, and the Texas Rangers are conducting the investigation. Texas Department of Public Safety Sergeant Justin Baker confirmed over the phone with the Odessa American that Texas Rangers are investigating. Emergency temporary standard for COVID vaccinations. At 1 p.m. Monday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation is hosting the role of employers, promoting COVID-19 vaccines and implementing mandates. During the event, speakers will share data on the current trends in public attitudes, the most effective ways to communicate with employees, and lessons learned from Rocket Mortgage as to how they are approaching these issues with their workforce. Last week, the U.S. Department of Labor issued its emergency temporary standard that requires businesses with at least 100 employees to ensure vaccination of their workers or, for those workers who are unvaccinated, masking policies and weekly testing. The Department of Labor has provided several fact sheets and FAQs, and while these documents provide useful information, there is much more detail in the full regulatory text. That's why last week the U.S. Chamber hosted a special vaccine mandate briefing and created an easy-to-digest document detailing the facts on the ETS for COVID-19 vaccinations. Education Foundation pledges dollars to grow local teachers. One of Ector County ISD's strategic priorities is the development of teachers from the local area, also known as Grow Our Own efforts. A piece of that talent pipeline development is identifying current high school students who want to pursue a career in education and helping them along that pathway. ECISD's new program is called Future Teachers of Odessa. A donation of $40,000 from the Education Foundation of Odessa is directed toward this new teacher prep program and will be used to pay for dual credit tuition through both Odessa College and the University of Texas Permian Basin. ECISD will have an event Monday celebrating this at 10 a.m. in room C34A at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, 300 East 29th Street, as representatives from ECISD, OC, and UTPB recognize the Education Foundation donation. OHS student arrested. An Odessa High School administrator, while conducting an investigation Friday afternoon, discovered a 16-year-old male student with a gun in his bag. A news release said the student was immediately arrested and is now charged with places weapons prohibited, a third-degree felony. School district officials ask for parents' help in emphasizing with their kids the consequences of bringing prohibited items to school. Those consequences can be severe, including expulsion and criminal charges. We want to thank the administrators involved and our ECISD police, who kept everyone's safety at the forefront as they responded to the report. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Saturday, November 13th. Frank Edison Lassiter, Jr., 71, of Sheffield, Texas, passed away on November 8th. Frank was born in Pecos on September 15th, 1950, to Frank Edison Lassiter, Sr. and Lila Lynette Lassiter. He is survived by his wife, Lee Lassiter, daughters Rebecca and Jeffrey Bunger, Amanda and Joe LaPuma, Abby McMullen, and Stacy and Butch Eby. Brothers Ed and Brenda Lassiter, Roger and Deborah Lassiter, and Andy and Karen Lassiter. He is also survived by 16 grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Frank is preceded in death by his parents and his first wife, Beatrice Lassiter. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider making a memorial donation in Frank's honor to World Harvest Baptist Missions, Willow Park Baptist Church, 129 South Ranch House Road, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Telephone 817-441-1596. J. McGehee. Services will be held Monday at the Calview Heights Baptist Church in Midland at 1 p.m. Burial will follow immediately after the service at Rest Haven Memorial Gardens. Brenda Joan Wagner, 73, passed away on November 6th at her home in Odessa. Brenda was born in Odessa to Johnny and Mona Wagner on September 1st, 1948. Brenda is preceded in death by her father, Johnny Wagner. Brenda is survived by her mother, Mona Wagner. Two brothers, Danny Wagner, Josh Hodges, and a sister, Janie Fife, as well as numerous nieces, nephews, and many friends. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Bodilio A. Hernandez, 83, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 11th in Crane. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. November 15th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Visitation will be held at Odessa Funeral Home Chapel on Saturday, November 13th. Burial will follow at the Ector County Cemetery. Father Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home in Odessa. Kai Zen My King Powell, 6 months, died Friday, November 5th in Fort Worth. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Bartolo Falcon, Bart Sanchez, 50, of Toya, died Tuesday, November 9th in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 16th at the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints in Pecos. Burial will follow at 2 p.m. Catholic Cemetery in Toya. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sue Velvadine Sosa, 92, of Odessa, died Tuesday, November 2nd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.